Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this third episode of Season 3 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include Radio GJ, voice actor, and singer-songwriter Dallas Wayne. We'll be talking about his new album, Coldwater, Tennessee, and the single, He Even Brought Her Flowers, which will be the duet with Country Music Hall of Fame and Grand Ole Opry member Bill Anderson. We'll also visit with Texas country supergroup The Wilder Blue, featuring Zane Williams, Paul Eason, Lyndon Hughes, Sean Rodriguez, and Andy Rogers. We'll talk about their new single, Wave Dancer. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and of course, be sure and share it with your friends. Now, would you give this a go or no way? The New York Post just did a big write-up on how the hottest new delicacy at restaurants is squirrel meat, at least at restaurants in the UK right now. Now, plenty of hunters eat squirrel meat, but it's not something you see on a lot of restaurant menus. People in the UK are seeing it more and more, though, and they're not even eating their own squirrels, they're eating ours. The North American gray squirrel is considered an invasive species over there, so killing it and eating it is encouraged. Now, it doesn't sound like you'll see squirrel meat at Applebee's anytime soon, but some fine dining restaurants might get in on the trend. Now, it's perfectly legal to kill and eat squirrels in most parts of the country. Even New York City has a squirrel hunting season that runs from November through the end of this month. Singer, songwriter, radio DJ, a little bit of all that stuff. Got a brand new album to talk about. We've got Dallas Wayne on the line with us today. And first off, Dallas, I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now Dallas, DJ, musician, singer, songwriter, how do all of those meld together for you? I mean, voice actor, you've got so many slashes after your name. How do you keep in line which one you're pursuing at the time, if you will?
I can't hold a job worth a hoop. So I just gotta keep bouncing back and forth. It can be done. You just gotta stay organized and stay focused the best way you can. And all of them kind of mesh into each other, quite easily. And one of them makes the other job a little bit easier. And because you bring the experiences from that other one into the other job, and it apexes into a quite mediocre career.
He said he doesn't like to brag, though, right?
but the old joke, I'll be in Wichita next week, Tulsa the week after that, and then I'll be in St. Louis, Missouri, and your parents say, what's the matter? Can't you keep a job?
Now, Dallas, the new music that you've got out now, what... how would you explain this to the listeners and coming out of pandemic time, how much did everything we were all going through have a part in the release of the new music?
It gave us a luxury to make this record because it took us off the road as far as that aspect of our career. Of course, the radio stuff still goes on every day. But the touring part, of course, was gone during that time completely. And it gave us time to really sit down and record a comprehensive, good album and take our time doing it. Because sometimes time constraints can really fool with you when in the creative process, we need to move on. You can't do that right now. You have to move on to something else. But they gave us the luxury of putting the album together. It is Coldwater, Tennessee is an album of stuff that I've written over the years and a new song or two. And, it got me back into the songwriting side of what I do. And I'm forever grateful to Buddy Cannon for producing this record and making me believe in myself as a writer again, because it's been a few years since I've done it.
Now, how hard is it to get back into writing? Is it like riding a bike or more like pulling teeth, if you will?
Well, it's like riding a bike and hitting a pothole and flipping over into the street and losing a couple of teeth. Writing has always been kind of therapeutic for me in a lot of ways, but for so many years through 13 albums, it would be like, I have a deadline. I have an album that I'm doing in 3 months. I better get off my butt and write something. So that's why I would go into that mode and do it that way. But writing for me these days is more of an enjoyment of the craft of songwriting, which I've gotten to know pretty well through our teachers, you know, the Harlan Howards and the Bill Andersons and the Willie Nelsons and the Hank Cochrans and those guys, you know, those are our teachers. And they taught us how to do this right. And so that's one of the things the radio has helped me with too, is because I'm reminded of that every day while I play those classic country songs, like, okay, that's how you do that. And you kind of file it away back in your head, and you keep it for when you need it.
Now, who has been the most influential on your songwriting process itself?
I'd have to say those guys that I just mentioned, Willie Nelson and Hank Cochran, Harlan Howard, Roger Miller, Chris Christopherson. Those are all poets as far as I'm concerned. And I have this screwy theory. There hasn't been a best-selling book of poetry in America since the late 1950s.
Wow.
I firmly believe it's because of the evolution of the songwriting process and the literary nature of songwriting in that golden age of the 60s and into the early 70s, where you had the Harlan Howards and the Hank Cochrans and the Bill Andersons and the Chris Christophersons and the Willies all writing at the top of their game. And I think that took the place of it. So I think that's my inspiration for those that style of stuff.
You talked about Willie. Obviously, you've got a little bit of a Willie background as well. And being on the Roadhouse doing the show, I mean, does that make you, whenever you're doing the songwriting process, does it make you put extra pressure on yourself knowing what it's going to sound like coming across the airwaves?
Well, it's funny because the last two records were cover records of all these old chestnuts of some great songs by some great writers. And the reason I'd kind of stopped songwriting during that time was I was so into listening to these writers work every day on the air, just passively through what was coming through my headphones every day. It's like, well, I can't write like that. I got an idea, but it ain't no Harlan Howard idea. So I'd move on to something else. I'd go watch TV or make a sandwich or something. But now I'm able to kind of focus back into the writing part of what I do. And it's something I really found I missed for 25 years. That's all I did.
Mm. Mm.
And to come back to it now, it seems almost new again.
Now to see the support that you've had from other artists and songwriters alike, what does that mean to you on a personal level?
There is a great sense of community, especially in country music. Even still to this day, there are some people that say that it's waned a little bit, but I think that there's still, everybody pulls for everybody else. I notice it when I walk through the doors of the Grand Ole Opry. I notice it when I go backstage at a show. There's nothing better to be on a package show with three or four other acts and to look over the wings while you're working, and they're watching it, and they got smiles on their faces. So they want, and I don't think they're laughing at us. I think they're actually enjoying it. And I think that's part of it, you know, but that sense of camaraderie is because they've all been through the same things you went through. And I think we all remember those things. We know what it means to go out and travel for 400 miles and play to 25 people. We also know what it's like to play to 2,000 the next night. And so those highs and lows are something that I think bonds us all together.
And how does being on the stage, how does that help you behind the mic in a studio all by yourself?
I think being an entertainer for 35 years before I got into radio, or 25 years, I guess. I'm not good at math, by the way. I think it really helped me get into radio because you can relate to your audience. Your audience is out there. You just can't see them. You're just talking into that microphone. You're talking to that microphone. But you have to pretend and envision all the people that are out there that are listening. You try to entertain them. You try to keep them laughing. You try to, if you're serious about something, you want to drive your message home, that's fine too. You know, whatever. Those are all the magical things of radio, where you can just reach out from that box and go into their living rooms or their cars or wherever they're listening to us these days.
And you talked about the radio stuff never stopped during the pandemic. And Was that therapeutic for you to be able to do the same thing that you've been doing in the midst of everything else going on in the world?
That was a big eye opener for me because it. Somebody got to get that. That was a big eye opener for me because I realized we were wondering what is this going to bring? What is this going to bring for the entertainment business? Because all of the people that we play they're all touring. That's their lifeblood. The airplay is their lifeblood. They're not going in the studio to make a record because nobody can get into the studio because they're all locked down. Or, you know, they're in the beginning. All these variables like this. And I realized that our listeners reaching out to them via radio is one of the few avenues that they had that was unobstructed due to COVID-19. And so you really had to kind of feel the importance of that when you sit down to do your show every day. You know, you're their source of information, you're their source of entertainment. And it was a great reminder for what radio and broadcasting should be about too.
Now, you mentioned the album Cold Water Tennessee. Tell us, do you have a particular favorite track off of the new album?
I like the new single coming out this week called I Hit the Road and the Road Hit Back. It's just a fun song. It rocks a little bit. And, it's a great song about some dumb kid trying to make it in the business and leaving home, which is near and dear to my heart. I love the title track. It's one of my favorite songs that I've ever written. It's a good old-fashioned killing song, which makes me happy. It's therapeutic to write those. And I do like it. And I love the song that I wrote with Bill Anderson and Buddy Cannon on here called He Even Brought Her Flowers. To me, that takes it back to a time in country music stylistically that I think is sorely missing. In fact, we have a recitation in that song, but you don't hardly hear recitations on the record anymore. And we were getting ready to finish the song, and I was doing the vocal, and I stopped and I said, Buddy Cannon, our producer, who was one of the co-writers on the song, I said, we should get our other co-writer, Bill Anderson, over here to do the recitation. He's the king of recitations. And Bill was gracious enough to do it, and he nailed it, you know, and there's nobody does a recitation better than Bill Anderson. And so that it kind of took that back to a 1968 feel in country music, which was very nice for me.
Now, Dallas, do you still have to pinch yourself when you mention the names like Buddy Cannon, the Bill Andersons that you work side by side with, songwriting with? I mean, when you look back, I mean, how hard is it for you to make sense of it all, if you will?
It's interesting when you look down at your phone on Christmas morning and it's David Allan Coe calling to wish you a Merry Christmas. And you wonder what is Christmas like at David Allan Coe's house? You never even thought about that until this call. It humanizes that. It's wonderful because all these people were your teachers. When you start out in this business, you get influences, you have teachers, you have heroes, and all these guys and gals that I've been fortunate to work with over the years. One time were heroes and teachers, and to call a lot of them friends is a magical thing, you know, at this point still.
Now, as the new album becomes available, tell our listeners, Dallas, where is the best place for folks to find Cold Water Tennessee, to find the singles, the social media, everything else? Where's the best place for folks to keep up with everything you've got going?
Wherever you usually get your music sources these days, and there's a lot of different options on how to receive your music during these times with internet, Amazon, and all that kind of stuff. It'll be available on all those outlets. It'll be available retail on the 22nd of April, the entire album. So pick it up wherever you feel comfortable buying your records.
All right. Well,
if you buy it from DallasPlain.com, though, I will lick the envelope. So if you need a DNA sample, it'll be on there. That's it.
It's a bonus. Most of them say we'll sign it, but hey, he's giving you DNA. How about that?
I lick the envelope, so go out of the house. Yes.
That's awesome. Well, Dallas, I know we're on a bit of a time constraint today. I appreciate you taking some time out, making some time for us today. Love the new album, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon, sir.
Any old time you feel like it, just pick up the phone and let's do it.
When you take your family to Disney World, you expect to make memories, but ideally, good memories. Two sisters, who are both adults, recently got into a drunken brawl in a section of Disney World called Disney Springs, where a lot of shops and restaurants are. One is 29 and the other is 31. Now, they're both from New Jersey and were having dinner with their family. Then they went to an Irish pub for drinks and had a few too many. They were trying to get home around midnight, but their phone died, so a security guard called them an Uber. But the Uber driver refused to take them because they were so drunk. Then the two sisters turned on each other for some reason. The older one called the younger one a bad mom and slapped her. Then they started throwing punches, and at some point, the younger sister puked on the ground. Now, security tried to separate them, but they got free, charged at each other, slipped in the puke, and fell into some bushes. Now, this all happened outside the Cirque du Soleil tent, by the way. Now, the younger sister then took her dress off, I'm guessing because it was covered in puke, so all she had on were her underwear and sandals, no bra, and they continued to fight. They got arrested for battery and domestic violence, but the DA decided not to pursue the case, so the charges were dropped. Group of guests, I should say, today. I was introduced to him, and my dog was introduced to him, too, a couple weeks ago. The Wilder Blue is the name of the group. Got a new single that just dropped. Excited to talk about that. And I'm going to let each of them do their own intro, because I will do terrible trying to catch up with their names. And I'll just let you guys introduce yourself first off.
Sure. I'll go first. My name is Zane Williams. And some of your listeners may know me. I have 7 albums out as a solo act. And Paul, let me hand it off to you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm Paul Eason. I did 3 of my own albums before playing with Kevin Fowler for 8 years and then joining this band a couple of years ago. So I play guitar, mandolin, and sing in this band.
I'm Sean Rodriguez. I have, played a cornucopia of different styles of music before landing myself into the country scene here in Texas. And I play bass and sing in this band.
Now, Zane, who was it? Was it you and Josh that started this? How was the first forming of this even a possibility, if you will?
Well, it's kind of the band I've always dreamed about having, but the pieces never came together on their own organically. And I read Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run, and I was inspired by how tenaciously he searched for whatever he had to do to get great music. Even, leaving his current situation or moving to a different city or whatever he had to do. And I thought, I know a lot of the great musicians in this Texas music scene. And I thought maybe I had enough of a reputation that some of them might be interested if I just went out on a limb and asked. So the first person I texted was Paul. Because I'd heard his song Mountains of Nuevo León, which I thought was awesome. And he's got 3 albums out. And I was looking for somebody that could share the songwriting duties and maybe sing lead some and also, play an instrument really great. And Paul fit all of those bills. It wasn't a requirement to have a strong, stubbly jaw, but he has that too. So, anyway, Paul, what did you think when I first texted you?
So I've known of Zane at least for a long time. And then I guess we kind of knew each other beforehand a little bit, but I was playing with Kevin Fowler and, I think you called me or something and just said, I think we should start a band together. And I was like, a little bit blown away because I had so much respect for Zane as a songwriter already. And I was like, yeah, I have to do that. I have to be part of that, especially because I missed creating music on my own or, in a band when I was playing guitar for somebody else. So I was excited for sure.
Yeah. And then we found videos of this crazy singing drummer on the internet. Some dude named Lyndon Hughes that was playing with Roger Krieger. We saw some video of him singing and we were like, dude, if we want a singing drummer, this guy's the man. So we went and we gave Lyndon a call, and Lyndon was working at a studio down in Houston at the time. So Lyndon, What did you say?
Yes. Okay. Well, as soon as Zane called me, I did know who Zane was. Weeks before, maybe a month before, was like, I saw videos of this dude on Facebook and he's writing songs and he's beatboxing. And I was just like, dude, he's got rhythm. He's got lyrics. And then he sends me a song, Dixie Darlin', out of the blue. And I was like, is that you playing guitar? And you wrote this song? It was from that moment on, I just convinced the band that this was my job to lose at that point. And I did my best to win the guys over. So I was all in from the get-go. It was just a matter of them realizing it. Yeah.
And then Andy Rogers is not here, but he was playing bass in my Zane Williams band. And the four of us, Lynn and Paul and Andy and I got together. We made some demos. Andy played bass on the demos, but then he also plays banjo and dobro. So he played those two instruments on some of the demos as well. And we were like, wow, that's a really great sound. And we loved his banjo and dobro playing so much that we were like, man, I think it'd be easier to get a bass player. So we convinced him to take over the sort of auxiliary instrument role. And then we were looking for a bass player, and we went through two of them that didn't work out. So we were really desperate when we found Sean Rodriguez, when we heard about him. And basically we knew of Sean because he had been playing with Bree Bagwell, and we knew that he sang and that he played bass and that he was a cool dude. And we found out that he had quit the Bree Bagwell thing. And so I called him like almost the next day, not quite the next day, you know, but almost the next day. Cause we had our first gig was 2 months from then and we didn't have a bass player. So what did you think, Sean?
I mean, I was surprised to say the least. I mean, I definitely used my time in Bree's band to stake a reputation as a dude who could sing higher than she could. If I had to.
Yeah.
I guess it panned out because then I got this call and they're just like, well, we need someone who could maybe sing that high and play bass, and you clearly don't have a job anymore. I just can't believe it. Still grateful that I got called at all.
Now, Zane, how long did it take to get the vocals pulled together? I mean, we've talked about this before, doing a little singing myself, working vocals, whenever you get that right group, it can go seamlessly. Was it quick getting the voices all melded together?
So yes and no. I will say the first time Sean came to the studio to hang out with us and play on a couple of tracks, that was the first time that all five of us sang together, and we got together in the lobby of the studio, and just for fun, we decided, we're like, all right, let's just sing Seven Bridge Road. I mean, come on, why not? Let's just do it. Everybody, we didn't even rehearse it, or just everybody pick a part, and let's just do Seven Bridges Road. And it did. I think I got goosebumps. I mean, it was definitely like, okay, that sounds pretty flipping awesome for not even trying or not rehearsing at all. But I will say, you know, our recorded music, we worked up a lot of complicated parts, and I definitely feel that we're gelling now after playing together for a couple of years in a way that we were not gelling at first. It was like the potential was there, but it just takes a while to really get comfortable enough with everybody's inflections and everything to where you really lock it in. And I think we're doing that now for the most part, but the raw potential was always there, but it has taken a while to dial it in.
And Sean, to be a part of a vocal group in that's a Texas country as well, that you guys actually put some music theory into practice. I mean, how cool is that?
It's incredible. That was the thing when Zane called me. He said, I'm putting together this band and we're going to be kind of like the Texas Country Eagles. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, really? It's a bold statement. But boy, howdy, is it? It's just, I mean, you don't get opportunities like this really almost ever. And to Zane's point, to have a place in time where it's like, ooh, maybe I could have my dream band where everybody sings and it's epic. I mean, you can't even explain it really.
Now, Paul, for you, what was, they both talked about the goosebumps. What was your goosebump moment, if you will?
I'd probably also have to kind of choose the time that we all first sang together. I don't know, more special overall to me is like just having five guys who are all top quality players and singers, all, you know, like putting their all into a project, just to do something that's special that, you know, you can't really do otherwise. That's, I love that. Every time we get on stage, it's just real fun to be in a great band. So.
Well, Lyndon, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a shot too.
Oh, dude. Okay. So for me, my moment was the first time, in fact, that me and the first time that Zane came down to Houston and came to the studio I was working at. And then Paul came there as well. And then we sang that first song, Dixie Darlin'. And it was quite clear at that point for me. Now, it was only three vocals right there. And we've since then tried to figure out, like, how can we create that wall of sound vocally? Like, you know, but it was that first moment that I really knew that something was, it felt special. And I think it's turned out to be special. Now, since then, in the studio, we've really worked out, you know, shoot, who's singing lead, who's singing the high harmonies. Do we double up on the high harmonies? Do we change parts? Do we swap back and forth? The fact that we have so many guys that can, do that, it's just, it feels like we have so many tools in the toolbox that we've only scratched the surface.
And the single Wave Dancer, Zane, where'd the inspiration for this single come for you?
Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but you know, we live in polarized times, and you know, there's a lot of flack being traded by both sides on various issues, and I just remember kind of feeling like I, when I follow my own sort of moral compass and I'm searching for truth and love, those two balancing each other out, you know, I like to think of myself as a compassionate realist, you know, and as such, you know, I don't always identify with one side or the other. I'm just on the side of truth and love, wherever that would lead. And so, I think a lot of people actually feel that way. And I don't know, but I definitely feel that way. And so, I was just sitting right here in this shed is in my backyard. And I just kind of came up with the chorus of on the angry waves, I'm a dancer. Just kind of the idea of a sailor having their North Star, that even when they get blown and buffeted left and right, that they keep on course that way. And that was kind of the inspiration.
Now tell us the album, the upcoming tour dates and all that stuff. Let me see. Who do I want to, Sean, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Where's a good place for folks to find that info? Do you know that info?
I do know that info by chance. It just so happens. The large majority of the info you can find on our website, www.thewilderblue.com. It's very important that you put the in there. But if you go to our website, you can find a little tab that says shows, and it's got all our upcoming tour dates. You can pre-order the album, which comes out March 25th. you know, once it gets to be about mid-March, we're really going to be taking it all over. We're going to Montana. We're doing a lot of shows in Texas. We're playing at Gilly's in Choctaw at the casino. You know, we're about to be very busy, and we're going to try and bring it to as many ears as humanly possible.
And that's good stuff. Well, let me see, Zane, Sean, Paul, and Lyndon. Did I get them all? I know there's an Andy as well, right?
There is an Andy.
How about that? I was afraid I would not be able to keep up with the name, so I'm a little bit proud of myself today on that.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Well, it's been great to visit with you guys. Thank you for your time. Love the sound, and look forward to seeing you guys live real soon.
Thanks, Cameron.
Thanks, brother.
We'll pull up another old RV in your front yard sometime, and we'll do another interview sometime.
That'll be awesome. Once again, I'd like to say thanks for joining us for this third episode in Season 3 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at GQWithCam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit our merch store where we've got hoodies, mugs, tumblers, shirts, stickers, and more. That's gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you have a special guest idea, just email me, cameron@gqwithcam.com. Once again, thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day.